This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast. A new podcast coming your way from the nation's capital. Botch and I sitting here in Canadian Tire Center ahead of the Vancouver Canucks practice as they launch a five-game road trip here in Ottawa. The podcast, as always, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM in Coquitlam. I was thinking that maybe Eagle Ridge was going to hook us up with some sort of super vehicle to drive us across the country, but alas, no. We both took flights, and here we are as we make our way from Ottawa to Boston, Buffalo, Detroit, and Minnesota. The five games on this trip for the Vancouver Canucks, who have just one win after the four-game homestand. Lots of storylines, not many wins, but lots of storylines, and we'll get to those. Again, this podcast brought to you by Eagle Ridge GM, out in Coquitlam, 2595 Barnett Highway. If you're in the hunt for a new vehicle, we certainly recommend that you check them out online, eagleridgegm.com. Fancy meeting you here in Ottawa, Botch.
Yeah, I see you've already been out and about. You've already added to your Instagram account. There's a shot of you, I think it's your eye, at the Parliament building. So you've been sightseeing already, and that's fantastic. I mean, enjoy it all. Drink in Ottawa, right? Like, where else would you rather be?
It was sort of an artsy Instagram photo, I will give you that. There's like half my face, because I didn't want it just to look like a stock postcard photo of Parliament Hill, right? Like anybody can take one of those. So I kind of had to prove that I was, in fact, the guy taking the picture. So JPAT1040 is the Instagram account. If people haven't checked it out, it's kind of me documenting life on the road and Parliament Hill, the Parliament buildings, the obligatory Ottawa photo. You, a veteran guy of all these trips and traveling around the NHL, been there and done that. Me, I kind of felt that I better get out. And it's been like 20 some years since I've been in Ottawa. So I thought it was a sunny day, better get out early and see the Parliament buildings.
Yeah, the pics like that, that's when you need the flat JPAT. You throw the flat JPAT into the pic. There you are. You're there. The Parliament building's there. And you don't have to take one of those ridiculous like selfies of a big smile JPAT right there. It's the flat JPAT. Let it take care of everything.
So I checked into my hotel last night, got in around dinner hour. And it was sort of raining, and I'm a Vancouver guy, so not going to faze me. I park my rental car in the loading zone, and I run in to check into the hotel. And I'm there, and the woman at the desk is sort of making small talk and says something about, look at the rain. And I'm thinking, I'm from Vancouver. I've seen enough rain. This isn't that big a deal. In the time that I went from my rental car to the front desk, like a flood of biblical proportions, it was coming in sideways. I turn around. There's construction right out in front of the hotel. There was construction fencing. There was a newspaper box. There were traffic cones. Like, they were flying down there. It was unbelievable for about 10 minutes. So she wasn't wrong when she was trying to point out the weather. But it has changed. It's a beautiful day. And not that that matters, because we're indoors for practice to see the Vancouver Canucks get down to work. They got to turn this thing around, Botch. As I said right off the top, I mean, there are so many storylines. We're a week into this thing. We may need the flat JPAT for Travis Green here pretty soon. He's starting to, well, he's got issues. He's got injury issues. The future captain got benched the other night. The big boy with the big shot couldn't get onto the 5-on-3. Look, four games into the season, this power play is a hot button issue.
Well, yeah, and you are right. There are a lot of subjects to talk about, but I think we do have to start with you, because you have been like a main, you've been at the center of a lot of what's been going on. In fact, so much so that I find myself like putting together my provies after the night. And I'm like, on Saturday, I'm thinking, like, I can't go back to the JPAT. Well, like, I can't overuse this guy. Like you're like a goalie that starts too much. I have to occasionally, you know, give the provies a break. Like, there can't be too much. This is what I'm thinking that night. So I'm hoping that, you know, nothing happened. Like, that JPAT doesn't do anything. You don't do anything during the day that's going to force me to put you into the provies. And I had constructed, you know, by the time the game had ended, I had constructed what I thought was, okay, this is a really good provies here. I have like 2,000 words. Patterson's not part of it. Perfect. I can give him a break and give the readers a break. But sure as fuck, like in the post game, all of a sudden, once again, you become the centerpiece of a couple of different issues. And we can start, you know, because this is, I've been thinking about this since, like, we can start with Markstrom, because you bring up the power play. I'm not sure what was worse that night, the power play or Markstrom, but it's post game. We're in the Canucks locker room. I'm walking around. Like, I don't like to follow the scrum because I'm trying to get something new and different to add to the Provies mix. So generally, I try to steer away from the scrum. So I'm at the other side of the room. I see the scrum develop, kind of envelope around Markstrom there. You're at the front of it. And apparently Markstrom stands up there and everyone freezes. No one asks him a question. And I understand like why you're waiting. Because you don't want to, like, you can't always be the guy. Like, you can't always be the guy asking the questions. Like, someone else has to step up. And we've gone through, like, a kind of revolution in Vancouver media, where there are a lot of different people, new people. Like, not too long ago, Elliot Papp, who's a listener of the podcast, we had him, and he would always ask questions, and tough questions. He wasn't afraid, wasn't intimidated. You could always count on him, and sometimes odd, off the crazy questions. But you could count on him. He was in the scrum. He's going to ask questions. There are certain people you could count on. And now I feel like, okay, the only guy that's in that scrum that anyone can count on asking it is Patterson. You waited so long, no one said anything, and all of a sudden, Markstrom like nods to everyone, and he's gonna walk away without having at like the big tough Vancouver media can't even blurt out one single question to this guy. You save the day, jump in there, ask a couple of questions. You got fantastic answers, like the best answers I've ever seen Markstrom give. You're finished. No one else asks anything. He walks away, and everyone uses these clips, which I think is totally bush and unfair. Like, if you're going to be in that scrum, and if you're part of the media and listening to this, if you're going to be part of that scrum, you got to ask questions. It's your freaking job. Do it. Participate in what we're all trying to do here. And that's fun. Then when Patterson asks his great questions and he gets great answers, I got no problem with you using them. Generally, my rule, if I'm in a scrum, I generally use the answers to the questions I ask. You know, unless they're over the top, fantastic answers, and you got him with Markstrom. I don't know what it was like in that scrum and how you saw it, but man, that was crazy to me.
It was kind of funny because I you're right. You work the room, and then they always bring him to the front of the room, put him up in front of the monitor there, and I was at the back of the room. I was like, oh crap, there's Markstrom. So I'm hustling over there, and I get to the scrum, and it's starting to develop, and I got my head down, and I'm trying to hit record on my device and get ready, and I look up. And you're right. I figure, all right, somebody's going to ask a question. And then there's this long, awkward pause and silence. And Markstrom says, thanks. And then
he's going to leave.
Yeah.
And he just gave up 5 goals and he's going to leave.
Right. And so I was like, this can't happen. All right, here we go. And so I can't remember what the question was to start. But he was terrific, and he's been very good with us in the media. And I don't know if the fans care that much about, you know, the good guys and the bad guys in the locker room, but you know, when Jacob Markstrom was signed and Miller left, and I thought, this is not, you know, this could get dicey if he's going to be the everyday guy, just with his demeanor. You know, he's a giant, first of all. He can be an imposing, intimidating guy. Now they got two of them. Two biggest guys are their goaltenders. That's another issue for this hockey club. But, yeah, I mean, he stood in there. We saw Kuz slide in one day, like, after practice. Right. You know, just striking up a conversation in the stall, like, just chatting him up and Markstrom laughing and telling jokes. And, like, that's a Jacob Markstrom. Like, I don't know. I've never seen that guy before. So, to his credit, he did stand in there the other night and – you know, it's tough. He's given up 5 and they're just lost. And like, you don't want to be the bad guy. So you're right. It would be nice to have somebody come out of the bullpen on occasion, right, just to lighten the load. But it wasn't to be. And so,
that happened. And then, so I'm like, oh shit, like I've got to include all of this. Like that's like crazy, interesting interaction and stuff. And then right after that, we're in the room with Travis Green. And you ask like an amazing, like I just like this is that question that you asked, and I don't know if you can reword it now, but like you asked that question after the game about the 5-on-3, and like I often say, like I'm jealous of your questions. I've said that since this podcast has started. That was a that was a Mona Lisa question. Like that was just beautifully crafted. You didn't mention Brock Besser. You asked about the 5-on-3 and essentially you said, like, as it's constructed, do you have any shooters? And right away, he like you could see like the wheels turn immediately as he's going through the guys on that list. And you can see him check off, like, okay, I can't say the Sedins because they don't really shoot. I can't say Gagne because guy's been a muffin factory so far. Okay. Vanek, he says. And it's like, Vanek, Vanek's your net front guy. Why are you saying Vanek? And once he gets out Thomas Vanek, he backtracks and he sees what you're getting at, which is so amazing to me because the question, there was layers to his freaking answer. He comes back and he says, obviously, you're saying I should have Besser on that 5-on-3 unit. And as I wrote in the Probies, you're goddamn right we're saying that, Travis. Yes, we're saying he's got the best shot on the team. And I'm not even sure, I asked you before this started, who would you even say is in the running? And you couldn't even name a guy in the running. The entire power play should be constructed around the one guy who is a one-shot scorer. Every shot he takes so far this season, or at least 70% of them, you see the goalie like reaching out his glove and like doing straining, just doing everything he can to knock it down. And as I was pointing out to you, and you do that in comparison to Gagne. And as you said, it was like the goalie receives the Gagne shot like it's a warm hug. Like he just pulls it into his chest. He gently lays it down on the ice and all of a sudden is going back the other way. So all of that was amazing. I included all of that in the Provies. And the thing was the day, like this was a couple of days earlier when the Erickson stuff all happened. And that was another JPEG whirlwind of stuff because it was that morning you had gone on 1040 with Pratt and you had to like, no one was asking about Erickson. Like we had talked about this previously, like Travis Green in 6 weeks literally had not been asked one question about Louis Erickson. And you decided to like, you know, this, and you rightfully decided this has to be a talking point. Like in this big, bad hockey market of Vancouver, we can't go an entire season and not talk about the $6 million guy who's got the $36 million contract, who just scored 11 goals. So you bring it up on Pratt Show. Then we're heading into the Travis Green thing, and you go, today's the day. And I said, what do you mean today's the day? You go, today's the day I'm asking about Erickson. And I thought, oh, boy, this is good. So I start lining up my Erickson questions. And I want to participate. You ask a question. I asked a couple of questions on Erickson. And all of a sudden, it became this big, hot-button topic to the point where I'm sitting right in the game, and Ed comes in, and Ed doesn't really listen to the podcast. He comes in, and he goes, holy shit. And I said, what? He goes, I was just listening to the pregame show, and all they keep talking about is how shitty Erickson is. Both of this, I'm going back and forth, and they're both talking about it. And I'm going, really? He goes, and not for a short time. They were going on and on and on about Erickson. He's like, what's going on? Like, he was even shocked that anyone would be talking about Erickson. And, of course, I know the whole backstory of what led up to that. And now, you know, Erickson turned into a huge story. He's injured and gone for God knows what. So anyways, you have become this focal point. And I don't want to keep, right? I don't want to keep including you in the Provies. So I'm almost hoping that you don't do anything interesting today.
Stop talking about me. Okay, a couple of things there. One is, and we joke about the power of the podcast, but it is funny. Last week when we sat at UBC, we had a dedicated segment at the end of the podcast where you and I talked about Louis Erickson because nobody else was. And you look at what's transpired in the last 7 days. It went from the pregame show talk to just an absolute shitstorm after the game because in that third game, the game against Winnipeg, nothing. He gets benched. The $6 million man is parked for the third period. And then one shift into Saturday night. And again, we'll get an update today. And by the time you listen to this, you may know the extent of the injury. It didn't look good. And I didn't like that play either. Oh, that like, we know Tanner Glass. We've all been around Tanner Glass. Good guy, Ivy League guy, scrapper, you know, has scratched and clawed his way. And he is a good guy. I'll give him that. But that was just a dirty play. Puck is nowhere close to Erickson. Finally, Louis Erickson's going hard to the net. Like, that's what you want to see the guy do. And Tanner Glass, you know, kind of pitchforks him, turns him around, and then he gets tangled up and, you know, gut feeling. And again, we'll wait for an update, but he's not on the trip. And so I think it could be a while before we see Louis Erickson.
Yeah, and I think knee, right? So I think that you could be looking at a similar timeline to what you saw with Alex Edler is now out 4 to 6 weeks, which is, you know, another story in and of itself. And I think you started all of this talking about the power play. I haven't really, you know, I mentioned Besser, but the thing with the power play is why I'm thinking about that now with Edler being out, because it's met these massive minutes from Michael Delzato, who has been thrust into this unexpected role where he's kind of been the number one defenseman on the team. Like, I was super surprised. I'm actually just surprised at the way that Travis Green has deployed Delzato. He obviously really has a lot of trust in Delzato, but man, so far the results have been mixed. Delzato's been on the ice for a lot of even strength goals against. He's been okay. Certainly not good enough, I think, to be riding him for 24, 25 minutes a game. And I'm seeing like Chris Tanev all of a sudden get marginalized. He's the guy down to 16, 17. Guys, Chris Tanev is the best defenseman on this team. Okay. You can make the argument that, you know, he gets hurt a lot and whatever. Maybe he can't play 25 minutes, but you got to go to him as much as possible. He's the best defenseman on the team, and I don't care how Travis Green wants to play.
Two-goal Tanev. He's the leading goal scorer on this hockey club. We talk about the power play woes. I joked the other night, give Tanman a chance on the man advantage. And really, when you look at some of the other options, you talk about Tanev and his numbers being down, his minutes being down. The one that surprises me, and it's four games. I get it's early. Things can change, will change. But Troy Stetcher, he can't, and he hasn't been benched, but he's having a tough time finding ice right now.
Right. And I don't think that this should be that surprising to people because last year he was paired with Alex Edler all year. And if he wasn't paired with Alex Edler, if he had some, if it was him and Hutton, I think that he would have been deployed similar to what he's getting right now. I think the problem for him is that he's not probably not a great fit, or at least he hasn't been with Ben Hutton. But as soon as he's not playing with one of the big boys, and by that I mean he can't really play with Tanev. So when he's not playing with Alex Edler, I can see how a coach could say, okay, he's probably going to be on a third pair and play 13, 14 minutes. Now, that of course kind of ignores how good and encouraging his season was last year. I think he can play more. I think he can handle more. But you know, there's what room is there with Delzato here? Like, there's no more room for guys like this. So I think that when Delzato was signed, some people thought, okay, this means that Yo Levy's not going to make the team. And they may have had a different reaction at the time if we said that, okay, not only does it mean Yo Levy's not the team, it also means that Troy Stetcher is going to be marginalized and only going to play 13, 14 minutes a game. I think if that happened, there would have been a lot different reaction to the Delzato signing.
Right. And I mean, Delzato's a guy that had trouble getting into the lineup with regularity in Philadelphia the last couple of seasons. And, you know, again, they like his mobility, but at some point there's got to be a bottom line. And you look at the guys that they brought in, like offense was an issue. We know that. I don't want to go down this road too far the last couple of years. Like, it's been tough to watch. I don't have to tell Canuck fans that, but four games into the season, they have scored three goals once. It was opening night, and that was the one game they won. The last three games, two goals on each night. You don't win many games in the NHL with just two goals in a hockey game. So they thought they could throw some money at offense in the offseason. Delzato was part of that. Gagne was a part of that. Bermistroff, Vanek. You know, Vanek has scored, but those other guys, like, there has been limited, if any, offensive contribution. And so, you know, I know it's only four games, but four games have looked an awful lot like what we saw for much of last season.
Yeah, and I think that exactly that is the problem here, in that that last game looked like a ton of games that we saw last year and the past couple of games, in fact. So it's made the first four games feel like a lot longer than it is. And I'm fine with this team, like, giving Travis a chance to get some momentum, to try to, like, I see a lot of people, oh, they had 8 points at this point last year and now they have three. Like, just chill out. Like, that team got worse as the season went on. How about a team that starts not great and gets better and shows signs of improvement? And I think that that's what you want to see, from Travis Green. But I do think that they're falling into a lot of the same bad habits or bad decisions that we have seen for the last 5 years. And, you know, I think there's no bigger example of that than the power play. When I see the Sedins out there for 2 minutes and 12 seconds of consecutive power play time, like that can't, like, seriously, in 2017, off, like, and this is the one thing that you wanted to fix, and you brought in all these guys, and all of those guys you can make the argument were brought in to help the power play. Certainly Dolzato, that was one of the objectives. Vanek, absolutely. To me, Vanek, and I'll ask Green about this later today, but that signing on September 1st, to me, suggests that Travis Green was looking at his roster, looking at his lineup, and he said to Jim, this isn't good enough. This isn't going to be good enough on the power play. I don't have the players to do it. I don't have the players to make it happen. And that, to me, is why they went out and September 1st to go out and sign Vanek. Like, that suggested Travis Green influence, or, you know, it's a lot of influence on that. So you bring in Vanek, you bring in Dolzato, you bring in Gagne, all to a certain degree, like, let's help the power play. Okay, then you roll the same static power play with the same, a lot of the same pieces in the same spots. And again, no guy to really shoot the puck and create those rebounds that they keep talking about. That's a problem. Like, I don't understand how Noel Brown can sit there and watch the Sedins just wear out. And they were worn out by the end of that 2 minutes and 12 seconds, which led to that shorthanded goal. Like, it was an awful, like, it was just a brutal, dumb mistake by Henrik Sedin, which started it on a bad pass into a slot where I think it was Vanek was totally covered. And then a weak attempt by Daniel Sedin to win a puck battle along the boards, and then they were all gone. You have one defenseman, you have four forwards. You can't let guys just wear out, 37-year-old guys wear out over, like, of all the decisions that we've seen so far, including Besser not playing the first two games, which looks kind of bad right now, or, you know, just, not bad, but just looks like it may have been a mistake. That to me was like an eye opener. Like, what the hell is he doing? Why did he leave those guys out there for all that time? I don't get it. I don't get the thought process. It's not 2011 anymore. The Sedins have been a big part of a bad power play for 5 years, other than one blip in that time. Collectively in that 5 years, second worst power play in the NHL. One constant, the Sedin twins. You got to do something to alleviate that. You can't keep doing what you're doing.
They need Besser on the power play, just to give Daniel the shove on the back check. 3 games into the season, his debut against Winnipeg, and that was his contribution on the power play. That's not true, because Daniel had scored on the rebound of the Besser shot, but another power play there. If people haven't seen it, you had the clip in the Provies the other night, too. But, you know, you don't think of that kind of stuff the National Hockey League level, but there's Brock Besser, and we know that Daniel's not the fastest guy, never has been, but certainly not now at 37, and there's Besser with the shove of the stick propelling his teammate on the back check. It was pretty good stuff.
It was amazing. It was I had missed it watching the game, and then a couple of people had clipped it and sent it to me, like, you got to see this. And I think that there's a lot of, like, little things that Brock Besser has been doing. Like, his shot is terrific, and he creates problems even when it doesn't go in. But there's twice that I can remember, including the one that they ended up scoring on, where he's taken a pass off his skate and bounced it to his stick. And on that play, though, the one that Daniel did score on, he said part of what helped on that play was having played with Vanek in the summer. I've seen Vanek do that exact same pass before. I was ready with my skate. He was ready to take that pass from his skate. He angled his skate to deflect it to his stick, and then he took the time to shoot to score. Okay. And I asked him about this, like, were you shooting just to get a puck on net? And obvious when you see it, it's obvious. He goes, no, I never do that. When my eyes light up when I'm in a spot like that, and all I want to do is try to shoot to score. Who else on this team has that kind of attitude? Who else on that team can bring that kind of mentality? I don't see anyone else. Like, make that kid the focal point of your power play. What do you have to lose? It's been shit for a long period of time. Here is your life preserver. Here is a guy who has, you know, who cares how old he is? Who cares that he hasn't practiced the 5-on-3? Put him out there. Let him go with that attitude. He does a lot of little things right. Reward him. And, you know, I really like what I've seen from Besser, and I love that push of Danielson, and it worked. Like, it was forechecking, and it was a 2-on-1, and he shoved Danielson in with his stick. All of a sudden, Sedin's skating as fast as I've ever seen him skate in his entire life, and he broke up the 2-on-1. He all of a sudden was defending the open guy. It was fantastic.
Pat Cass is coming to you from Ottawa. We're sitting in the seats at Canadian Tire Center, where the Canucks will take on the Ottawa Senators on Tuesday night to kick off a 5-game road trip. The Pat Cass presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam this month. Get a cash credit of up to 20% off the MSRP on most vehicles, including the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Go to eagleridgegm.com for full details. All right, I don't know if the doghouse travels with Travis Green when he heads out on the road, first road game of the new season for the Canucks, but doghouse had a number of occupants already in week number one. Besser didn't start the season. Vertanen, you knew it was a matter of time before he found his way in there. Louis Erickson was stapled to the bench. But I think the biggest surprise in all of this in week number one, Bo Horvat, your leading scorer, your best player, future captain, new contract, dad in the stands for the opening homestand, and dad had to watch as Bo got parked for much of the third period the other night. And I don't know, like, I watched all four of those games, was there, was, you know, keeping a pretty close eye on things. Like, I didn't think he was any better or any worse on Saturday than he was earlier in the homestand. But I don't know, is this the coach just trying to send a message, if you will, that he needs more from Bo? And he does need more from Bo. Bo was terrific on opening night against Edmonton with the two goals. The thing that kind of scares me with Bo Horvat is you've got Brandon Sutter, a dedicated shutdown guy, taking the hard matchups. Horvat, I think his number, he's like 40% controlling the shots right now. You know, he should benefit from Sutter taking the hard matchups. Bo Horvat's got to find a better way, or got to find a way to play more of the game in the offensive zone.
Well, but he did in that last game. Like, he was, he controlled 60% of the 63%. Of the even strength shots in that game. And you're right. His dad had been staying with him for the first couple of weeks. I was actually talking to his dad the morning of that game. And one of the topics that we were talking about was how things are going to change, like $5.5 million. It's a new reality. And you know, I was using Erickson as a reference point, that Erickson can play well and Erickson can be a good defender and Erickson can kill penalties and Erickson can control possession. But if Louis Erickson isn't scoring, people are going to be on Louis Erickson because he makes $6 million. Well, guess what? People are going to be on Bo Horvat when he wins 10 of 13 faceoffs, when he controls, most of the shot attempts in a game, when he has what I thought, he got a couple shots on net, got a couple more shot attempts. That was not a bad game. Like, if that's the baseline for guys getting benched, everyone's getting benched. Like, everyone's going to get benched and regularly. Like, that can't be the baseline. And the issue that I have is that you want to play a fast game. You want to skate. You want guys not to think, go, go, go. You've got two guys that I can see that kind of have the speed to make a difference, cutting through the neutral zone, backing guys off to create room. You got Bo Horvat, you got Jake Virtanen. Jake Virtanen sitting in the press box, and Bo Horvat gets benched for a little bit. I don't quite get it. I like that Travis Green is super honest. He can't help himself. I like the fact that, he backs up his positions. He justifies his positions. He presents reasons why he's thinking a certain way often enough. But I do think that it may grate on some of the players. And when Bo Horvat has a game like that, which was to me, like, he's going to play a lot worse games than that, guys. And for the coach to take that point and say, you know what? He was average. I like that. I like that honesty. I'm not sure how some of the players are going to react to that. I think that guys like Jake Virtanen are going to be fine, and probably Bo Horvat's going to be fine. Like, Horvat's, like, we talk about living with his dad is super hard on Bo Horvat. I don't know. Like, he had the two goals in the first game and he missed the net. He had that open net, almost had the hat trick. Tim was all over him about, like, you can't, how do you miss it? Like, he just, like, how do you miss it? Like, he's tough on Bo. So I do think that Bo is the type of guy that'll respond really well to Travis Green. I'm not sure everyone on that team is going to. And I kind of, I'll trust Travis to figure out which guys he can poke and which guys he can't. He chose to poke Bo. It is a new reality, $5.5 million, and the expectations are different. It can't just be winning faceoffs. It's got to be score goals, be a difference maker. And if that's the gauge, score goals, be a difference maker. Yeah, he did come up short in that last game, that past couple.
Fair enough. But in the same breath, in the same post-game press conference on Saturday, he's saying, oh, Bo was average, but I like Sven Berchi.
Oh, yeah. I don't. Sven's his guy. That's all. I mean,
those Portland ties run deep.
No, I don't really. I didn't get that. I didn't get that at all. Like, but I heard him say that. That's when my gear started turning and I thought, okay, Berchi's his guy. Like, so maybe he knows the guy. Like, you got to give him time. You got to give Travis time. And I think he deserves the benefit of the doubt. I think that, he has got a better read than we do on the guys he can poke and the guys he's got to stroke. And Berchi got some stroking after that game. Berchi's one of those guys that should be a difference maker. He's a guy that scored, 18 goals. He should be jumping up to that, 22, 23, dare I say 24 goal range. Like, if this team is going to get more offense, and I think even Green had that quote about, I don't see any 40 goal scorers on this team. Yeah, but I do see a guy in Brock Besser who scored 5 goals in 11 NHL games. What pace is that? That's got to be, I think that's pretty close to a 40 goal pace, guys. And he didn't play your first two. So if you are saying that goal scoring is that important, maybe your best shot guy should have been in there the first couple of games. But no, I did find it curious that Berchi got the stroke. Good boy. Good work. Good try. Got the good try ribbon.
I was thinking to myself as we make our way around on this road trip, Friday night, Canucks are in Buffalo. You and I, maybe we should duck out of that game and commandeer a vehicle and go to Utica and watch the Comets, because they look like they're going to be fun, and Goldie's putting on a show, and by the end of this trip, Goldie may very well be up. I don't know. I haven't seen him yet. I haven't heard that. I do expect that they're going to call somebody up, but, if Erickson's out for a while, are they looking for a Michael Chaput? Are they looking for a middle six guy, or do you have to reward Goldie? But, I mean, again.
Can you do that? Can you say, we have no 40-goal scorers, guys, but we really need to score, and then not bring up the guy that's got, 7 goals already? What does he have? Something crazy. He's going every game. Goldie's scoring. When I heard that after that game, my first thought, okay, Erickson's out. The team is losing.
Give us Goldie.
You want Goldie. Bring us Goldie. Bring it on. Let's see this. Let's see the goals. Let's see the guys that have a chance to score. And who has the better chances to score than guys like Besser and guys like Goldobin?
As if the hill isn't steep enough for the Canucks, they find out this morning that Erik Karlsson is going to be back and make his season debut for the Sens. They'll probably run him out there 40 minutes to try to bust the rust off his ankle. But look, this was the Ottawa team that Travis Green said the Canucks were soft against. This was, it was the after that game that he used the word soft. And then the following day out at UBC, he sort of elaborated and, it was about puck battles and, needs the 50-50 pucks he said he thought were 60-40 in Ottawa's favor. So it's interesting to see the same team 1 week later, and the Sens just absolutely obliterated the Alberta team, so they're riding high right now. Canucks struggled on the road last season, I think just 12 road wins all year long. You'd like to think you could get a little momentum going with the first game on a road trip, but this one's not going to be easy, not by a long shot.
No, and I think that you want, what do you want to see? You want to see levels of improvement. And I don't think that we can all just, gauge this team against its wins and losses and number of points. But I think it is fair to say, are they getting more scoring chances? Is Green's system working? It was designed to get them more offense. Are they getting more offense? Are they playing faster? Are they playing with speed? And certainly last game, they didn't. I don't really care whether they're, soft or, and he kind of explained that he was talking about puck battles and stuff. And that's great. Yeah. They have to win puck battles, but dudes, they have to create odd man rushes. They have to create scoring chances. They have to play with speed. And, that's what Green's pitching. That's what the team's pitching. If they do that and lose, I'm fine with it. But if they play like a you know, non-existent game, pretty much, you know, there weren't, I don't know, what was there, Mike Smith amazing saves that he had to make in that Flames game? Like, I sure don't remember many odd man rushes or chances, and that's with tons of power play time. Like, and all those power plays, other than a couple of saves he made on Brock Besser, I don't remember like dramatic Mike Smith saves on the great shooting Thomas Vanek. Tommy Gunn Vanek, I don't remember seeing it. So they're gonna have to generate more. It's really difficult against Ottawa. Ottawa loves to trap. Ottawa loves to slow it down. They got their work cut out for them. I think that they'll say, hey, this is one of the things that they were saying after the game, against Calgary, the Sedins or Daniel, and people kept confused. Like, people were thinking it was Henrik and they were asking him about the penalty. Like, I think it was JD was asking about the penalties he took. No, that was and then later, it's after the game, we're talking to Daniel, and he's saying, what made me think of it, he was saying how good he thought the team played, which was super delusional, and again, references back to last year, but he did admit the power play has been really bad, and then he received a lot of questions as though he was Henrik Sedin, and I'm like, like, JD asked him about taking the three penalties, he answered it, you know, like, I don't really remember seeing, you know, I didn't totally see the penalties. I was hoping JD would go a step or two further and continue to ask him questions as though he were Henrik. So he would have to explain that, guys, I'm not Henrik Sedin. But then guys took questions from that back and forth and they put them to Travis. Henrik said this and Henrik said that. So I'm like, I was trying to figure out the dominoes of whether Green would then go back to Henrik Sedin and go, dude, you said that, you know, we need this on the power. I don't remember what the answers were, but we need to do this on the power play. You really believe that? And Henrik would be like, I didn't even talk to the media that night. So, people need to ask Markstrom questions. If I'm doing a critique on the media, they need to ask Markstrom questions and they need to figure out the difference. Well, you know, which one's Daniel and which one's Henrik. And if you don't know, ask me or ask JPAT, because we've got it pretty well figured out by now.
Yeah, it was a mixed week for our good friend JD because he got the radio show. He got a new writing gig as well. So that's good. But yes, there was the Daniel Henrik confusion and the previous game. When Travis Green had been asked about Brock Besser and his debut.
It's Brock Besser's debut, okay? Like, the whole town had been talking about Brock Besser playing. We know it was a major topic, overwhelming topic, right? So after that game, Travis Green does his post-game presser, and it's going on for a while. Like, I don't know, 8-10 minutes. Like, we're all, you know, on... Obviously, all of the first few questions are about Brock Besser and how he played. And then he's asked about a bunch of other stuff. 8 or 9 minutes into it, in walks Jay. I don't know where he was or what he was doing.
Well,
tell me after. Because he walks into the room 8 minutes later. He glides right up into the front there. He's standing like right beside me. And that time you can add, like, if I go in late, I try to whisper to someone, hey, did they ask about this? Did they ask about that? He's very confident, you know, unusually confident for JD. And he says, what did you think about how Brock Besser played? And it was like, what the room? Just everyone just turns around like, what the fuck? Like, if Torts were there, he would have torn a strip off JD. And, but Travis, you know, he handled it well. He goes like, look, I think I answered that one, but I'll answer again for you for coming in 8 or 9 minutes late and asking the question that's basically been asked already like 3 or 4 times in 3 or 4 different ways. Why was he so late for that presser? I didn't get it.
Well, he was pissed because he went down to the locker room area and they've got the big, now the new security and the fencing and the gates and stuff. And he had left his media pass up in the press box. And he played the, don't you know who I am? I'm JD. I'm the managing editor of Canucks Army, and I've got a radio show now.
He didn't say that.
No, he didn't. He did not say that. But he did try to talk his way. He's like, come on, like, I'm here. You know, let me. No, the guy, like, the security guard stood his ground. And so he made JD go catch the elevator all the way back up to the 500 level to get this little piece of paper that showed that he was, in fact, allowed to enter the dressing room area. And therefore, he was playing catch up. But even in all that, like, I still think that you know, there's usually 10 or 15 minutes before the coach is out, right? So right. I would have thought you would have had time to get up, come back down, right. and you may have missed out in the dressing room area, but you would have been there for the coach. So I'm not sure exactly what delayed him to the point that he missed out on the first part of the coach. But yes, that was the week that was for JD.
I see him walk in, and I started thinking, like, did someone else get a Troy Stetcher scoop here that I didn't get? Was he doing a one-on-one with Stetcher in the hall that I missed?
Taking boxing lessons with Stetcher yeah, after right. the game? Hey, you said on the podcast last week, and you've been proven right here, that you thought Markstrom was going to get this run of games maybe right up until the Buffalo game, the first of the back-to-backs of the season. 4-for-4 on the homestand. I think a lot of people thought that with Markstrom unproven and the signing of Nilsson in the offseason, that maybe there'd be, you know, 3 for Markstrom and 1 for Nilsson on the homestand. Whatever the case, Travis Green elected to give Markstrom some run here. And there's been a weak goal in each of the games, and that's kind of been the knock on Jacob Markstrom throughout his career as he tries to establish himself. Again, the power play was the story the other night, but even that shorthanded goal, like in that moment, they needed a save. The Winnipeg game, you know, it's 2-1, a power play's failing, another shorthanded goal takes the game from 2-1 to 3-1. It was a nice shot by Tyler Myers, but they needed a save there. How do you critique, how do you review Jacob Markstrom's first week of the season?
Well, it wasn't good, you know, and I'm fine with the Jets game, whatever. Like, Myers shot, it's like, it was amazing. Like, shots are going to go in. Bad goals are going to happen, especially early in seasons often for goalies. Like, I went back and looked at when Miller started, and I brought this up on the morning show today with Pratt and Bro, because Pratt's been really adamant. He wants Nilsson in there, and I get guys who do want that, right? Like, that does make sense to me, you want to see what the other guy can do. But the thing is, they signed Markstrom. They believe in Markstrom. They screwed Markstrom over last year, like just screwed him over. Like, it was just unfair how last year went down. So I looked back at Miller when he started with the Canucks in 5 of his first 15 games. He was bad. He gave up at least four goals in 5 of those 15 games. It was hard. And I remember lots of the reasons why we would discuss and change his technique a bit and like new systems, a new coach and all that stuff. Well, all of that exists now for Markstrom, and added to that, he's never been a go-to guy before. So he's dealing with a lot mentally, physically, and plus it's the early part of the year. He didn't play a lot in the preseason. He's trying to find his rhythm, all of that. My point is, he deserves a chance. Like, he deserves a run. He deserves, you know, let's see. I'm not sure. I don't know if Markstrom can be a starter in the NHL. I don't think anyone knows if he can be a starter in the NHL. I do know he's earned a chance to see if he can do it, to not be like, oh, Nilsson, like, and if Nilsson plays well, then what? Then you got to go back to Nilsson again and again and again, and all of a sudden, Markstrom's boxed into the corner. When's he going to start? So, I like their plan. I do think, although Green was saying that he kind of second guessed, you know, himself and was wondering leading into the Flames game who he was going to start. But the way I understood it, the plan was going to be that Nilsson would see his first game in Buffalo. We'll see if things change now. I think you can certainly make the case that Nilsson should get the opportunity after that Flames game. If I were making the decision, I would argue this is when you show him the love. Like, this, the Jets game was fine. That wasn't a bad, he led, you know, okay, bad goal, but it was only 3 goals. The Flames game, at least a portion of that hung on Markstrom. You're right. They needed saves. They didn't get them. It cost the momentum. The power play, you know, did a great job of sucking out all the momentum from the Canucks, and whatever was left, Markstrom's goaltending sucked out the rest. But now's the time to say, look, we believe in you. We have trust in you. We have faith in you. You're starting against the Sens. Prove us right. Show us that, you know, this is not misplaced. So and then if it's another bad game after that, okay, what can you do? Like, there's only so many chances you can give him. But right now, to me, is the time to show him the love, time to give him the carrot.
You mentioned him earlier in passing, but it is big news, and we should probably discuss Alex Edler and his absence. 4 to 6 weeks, they're saying. I think we've both been at this long enough to know that 4 to 6 is rarely 4 and usually closer to 6, especially when it's a knee injury. So I'm not expecting to see him back before the end of November. third game of the season, and Alex Edler, who has been plagued by injuries the last couple of years, is gone. And it's a massive blow, and I get that he is a lightning rod to the broken sticks and the shin pads, but the guy plays big minutes, hard matchups. They are a far worse team with Alex Edler out of the lineup than they are when he's out there and able to perform and had, you know, eaten big minutes already early in the season. It's funny, though, Botch, because, like, Sammy Salo played for a decade in Vancouver and did amazing things on the ice. And yet all anybody ever remembers Sammy Salo for is injuries. Alex Edler has been here for more than a decade now and was a huge part of 2011. And as I said, I mean, there are some that, you know, he'll never win over. I get that. But, like, where are injuries now falling on the Alex Edler legacy? Like, when you think of Edler, can you separate the player from the injuries, or is that a big part of who he is and what he's all about now?
Yeah, I think that I actually think it would do him a favor in terms of how people think of him to remember the injuries. And you're right, it's not off. He's not talked about the same way that Salo is. And I think Salo over that time averaged 62, 65 games. And I don't know if you've done the math yet on what Edler has. I saw you pointed out that he's had like one full season in like 8 or 9 years. And it was a great season. He had 49 points in that year. I think how people think of Edler, they think of a guy who hasn't lived up to potential. They think of the inconsistency. They think of the guy who had that amazing game against the LA Kings in the playoffs where he had 10 hits. He looked like this monster player. And I think that was always in him. I think he had the potential to be that guy at least a lot more regularly, but he's had back problems for a long time. I think that the injuries and, you know, all of the other injuries that have kind of conspired around him, and the injuries have really limited of who he can be. So rather than like criticizing Edler for, you know, not being consistent or not living up to the potential or not being the guy we saw in flashes here and there, I think you need to think that, okay, Edler could have been that guy, but injuries have really, like, that's what struck me when I saw you point out, like, okay, look at all these years and he's only played like 60 plus games in most of them. What struck out to me was, shit, he has been hurt a lot, and that's probably why he hasn't reached the level that a lot of us thought that he could be. He's still a really good defenseman. I think on any team in the league, he's a rock solid number two pairing guy when he's healthy. I think I do see he's inconsistent, and a part of that is he's hurt a ton. And it doesn't help that he's been on a team for the past 3-4 years that never has the puck. And when guys don't have the puck, defensemen are always, you know, they're absorbing hits and they're getting contact. That's not exactly how he was hurt in this particular play, but it adds up for him and Tanev and those guys. And maybe you are a little bit banged up. And so your knee kind of twists, or you catch an edge the wrong way when you're trying to hit Scheifele. You know, I think that there's reasons that Edler isn't the Edler that we hope for. He's still a really good defenseman, but he's almost at that Sammy Salo level where he's had, at one point I'm going to go back and count him up, but it must be 25, 26 injuries in the past 8 years or something. It's got to be close to that.
Yeah, and some pretty severe ones. And, you know, he himself said, I'm not sure I'm ever going to be 100% again with the back surgery way back when. But in more recent years, broken finger, broken bone in his foot. Now it's his knee. And you're right. At 31, he's got this year and next year left on his contract. And, you know, you just wonder. I mean, he's been a guy, I'm not going to say he's been in the center of trade talk, but certainly from the fans or a lot of people that would think, you know, and the point that you make, like on another team in the right situation, he would be a terrific second pairing guy. And you just wonder if that will ever come to be. And you look at all the other guys that have been moved out and, you know, will it, is he the next one? Obviously, well, he's injured. He's not going to be, but, you just wonder if the writing's on the wall and if he wouldn't be better served. But that brings us back to
the writing is on the wall, by the way. The writing is on the wall for him. And I actually have Edler as a potential. He's got 1 year left. I think that the Canucks need to consider trading him, and I think that they would consider trying to trade him. But of course, this brings us to, will Edler ever waive? And if he doesn't, I do honestly think that a possibility it would be a buyout, because I don't know if they're right on Pouliot, but they really believe in Pouliot. And obviously we've seen how much Green loves Delzato, and
Hutton. So if Delzato, Pouliot, and Hutton are all in your top six, there's not room in that top six generally for Alex Edler to play the role. Like, I think that they would consider, I think this is the year that they'll consider trying to look at a trade, seeing if that's possible, and if not, at least consider a potential buyout.
Scary thing for me there is that essentially Delzato, Hutton, and Pouliot all sort of profile as the same guy. I mean, they're about the same size. They all want to play that up-tempo game. We talk about power play with all three of them.
And they still need a guy like that. Like, they brought in all these guys, and none of them are filling. They still need that puck-moving power play guy, and they've brought all those guys in.
All right, road trip is just about to get going here. You're going to show me the ropes. Boston, Buffalo, Detroit, and Minnesota to wrap things up. New rink in Detroit. I know how excited you were about the new rink in Edmonton.
I don't seem to be hearing about this new rink as much as I heard about Rogers' place.
I haven't seen the six-part mini-series documentary.
You know, I haven't even seen it, and I already love it way more than the one in Edmonton. Like, I am going to be over the top. This rink is amazing! Like, I almost wish I had an Instagram account just because I could flood it with how amazing the new arena is in Detroit.
But, and you have to keep this in mind, that there's a new rink in Vegas, too. So Detroit's not just, you know, it's not the only new rink. So you get to compare and then contrast later in the season, and we await the reviews of the new rinks in the National Hockey League. That's going to do it for the podcast from Ottawa as the Canucks get set to start out on this five-game road trip. Hopefully we'll be able to do another one next week. They're in Detroit on Sunday, Minnesota on Tuesday. So hopefully next Monday we'll be able to find some time to podcast from the road once again. The podcast presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. They're proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center where everybody's part of their hockey family. For Botch, it's Jeff Patterson from Ottawa. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast here on Province Radio.